I'm Wicked Ashlyn. Curious about me? Visit wickedashlyn.com to discover ways to connect, play games, and yes, even spoil me. Don't miss a moment of the fun. Subscribe now for new episodes every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Warning, this show may be highly arousing and distracting. Listener discretion advised.
Get ready to get titillated while being educated. Join the Queen of Fetish as I lead you into a world of sexuality while exploring outer limits of fetish, BDSM, and the sex trade industry. I'm your host, Wicked Ashlyn. On this episode, we discuss fireplay. Fireplay carries risks and requires extensive safety training and precautions. We strongly emphasize that it should only be attempted by those with appropriate knowledge and experience. This podcast promotes a safe and judgment-free space for discussions around consensual adult activities. I want you to imagine the flicker of a flame dancing across your skin, the thrill of controlled heat, the rush of pushing your boundaries. Fireplay offers a unique and exhilarating experience, but only if approached with knowledge and respect. Today on the Wicked Ashlyn podcast, we are diving into the captivating world of fireplay with the renowned Echoes Fire. Their expertise will guide you whether you're a seasoned player seeking fresh insights or a curious newcomer eager to learn. Get ready to ignite your understanding of this fascinating practice. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Echo. I've been in the scene since about 2008 and quickly got started with fire shortly thereafter. And I think about within a year, I started teaching. And then a year or so after that, I started developing my own product line with the goal to solve issues with what was currently out there.
Awesome. And what is fireplay? What are the common misconceptions when it comes to it?
So fireplay is essentially the application of heat through the use of fire in a controlled, quote unquote, manner. And we apply that to the skin. So it's either the fire directly or the heat from the actual flame itself. There are a multitude of things that it encompasses. So you can do anything from fire play, fire massage, there's fire flogging. There's this new thing that came about in the last 10 years or so. I believe they call it fire towel. Then there's fire bubbles, there's fire caning. So there's fire cupping as well. It develops it contains an entire sort of spectrum, but at the core of it, it involves a flame of some sort. As far as misconceptions go, the first and foremost is probably the fact that if you have body hair, it doesn't mix well with fire. That is true to some extent. There are considerations that you want to look at, but generally speaking, it doesn't matter how much hair you have, you can do fire. You just want to be slightly more careful and maybe adjust your technique slightly.
Okay, and you mentioned some activities in there that you can do with fire play. Is there any activities that you like to talk about today? I know I heard fire flogging, kind of interested in that one. But is there any other ones that you are interested in?
The ones that I do specifically, I can talk a little bit more about. I mostly do fire massage, fire play, fire caning, and fire cupping. We'll start with those. So fire play is your most basic form when it comes to, you know, anything fire. Generally speaking, you're using what we call fire torches or fire wands, depending on who you ask. But essentially, they are three parts. So you have a handle of some sort, you have a stem, which is typically a metal rod, and then at the far end, you have some sort of wick. I refer to it very often as a torch head, but it's essentially a wick. It can be made from a multitude of materials, but 9 times out of 10, it's going to be made of cotton. It could be made of Kevlar as well, for instance, if you want to use 90% ISO, but generally speaking, it's made of 100% cotton. Fire play, you're essentially taking that torch, you're soaking it in isopropyl alcohol, 70%, and you essentially light that on fire, and then you apply that torch to the skin. With fire play, we're kind of looking at a few things. We're either creating mind fucks or we're playing with sensation, you know, whether that is to make it kind of like feel good or feel painful, or maybe we're causing small controlled burns. But that's generally the gist of fire play. Fire massage has more the goal of creating an overall even consistent heat that you build up and work through the body. Sort of like if you went and got a massage. A masseuse is not going to touch your upper back and then your right leg and then your lower back and then your right leg and your right arm and then your left leg and then your right leg. They're not going to jump around like that. So when it comes to fire massage, we try to mimic those patterns. We typically are going to start on the back, but that's not a hard and fast rule. But what we want to do is we want to mimic patterns throughout the body. So if we start on the back and we work from the shoulders all the way down to where the buttock starts, you know, and then we work our way to the legs, we want to mimic what we're doing on each leg. We want to mimic techniques. We want to mimic patterns. We want to mimic the amount of heat that we're applying. And the goal is to have it be relaxing and have it be consistent. It's a very hard goal to obtain, especially working with fire. There are a few ways to do it, but generally speaking, that's the goal. Then you have fire cupping. There are some who take the approach with cupping where it's more for therapeutic purposes. Others do it more for play. Generally speaking, fire cupping is simply the process of taking a glass cup that is designed to be used as such, and then you take your torch and you put it on the inside, and then you pop that down on the skin. And it basically creates reverse acupressure. So you heat up the air inside, you put it on the skin. As it cools, the air contracts and pulls the skin up into the cup. Fire caning essentially is, think of it as an elongated torch, but that mimics the design of a traditional cane that one would use in BDSM. With this design, it's actually one of the ones that I came up with, and it's the same principle with the handle, the stem, and the torch head. But in this case, it's about 28 and a half inches are the ones that I make. Generally speaking, that size should be tailored to each person. You want something of a certain length that, with the position that you'll be caning in, you have your extinguishing hand to be able to put out any trails on the skin when you're caning. So the length of it matters. Essentially, you're going to take that, you're going to soak it, in this case, 91%, because with caning, we're typically using 91, which means that our torch head is also made of a Kevlar and cotton. So the core is cotton, the overlay or the outside is Kevlar. Since things burn from the outside in, the Kevlar protects our cotton. So we soak that in the 91%, we go ahead and light it, and we perform very similar techniques that we would with traditional caning. But it's mostly designed as an impact toy. It would more fall under the fire play in this case. And then typically it's going to be done in a vertical position. Then you have things like the fire flogging, which is not something I do yet. I eventually want to create fire flogger that solves the issues with what's currently out there. What's currently out there does work, but when it comes to fire floggers, you have a chain that disconnects the handle, or that is a disconnect from the handle to the Kevlar falls. Whereas in all other types of floggers that were not used for fire, you don't have that chain. And I want to limit that chain because that does affect the way in which you can use a fire flogger. So I don't quite do it yet, so I can't speak too much on that. But generally speaking, people will either use 70 or 91% ISO, depending on their personal preference. Basically, you kind of swing it similar to a flogger, but you use a little bit more momentum. You can either make contact with the skin, or you can kind of just throw the heat near it by swinging it around. And then you have things like the fire towels and the fire bubbles. So the fire towels, it's essentially what most people do is they take a towel and they fold it up and lay it down on a space, let's say, that covers someone's back. They would pour alcohol on the towel, but not to the edges, because you don't want the fire making its way around and getting to the body. And they would light that, and then the heat would kind of work its way through. From what I've seen outside of kink, where this is done in much of the Western world, I've heard that they use like wet seaweed on the skin first and then the towel on top, and then everything else is the same. I mean, that helps to control the heat transfer better, but I can't say for sure. It's not something that we're not doing that process here, at least within the United States, within the scene. And then you have fire bubbles, which is essentially taking like Dawn dish soap, mixing that with isopropyl. And then you basically take those bubbles, which have the isopropyl within the bubbles, and you put that on the skin and you go and light it. The towel and the bubbles I also don't do. I'm slightly familiar with it, but that's generally the process.
Okay, that's a lot more than I knew about the subject. I do have a question for maybe a newcomer might have. I know you said one of the equipment is like a wick. Is wax play similar to fire play, or are they two totally different fetishes?
Fire play and wax play would fall under what's called temperature play. Things like playing with ice would also fall under temperature play. Fire play is just sort of one of those subsets. of temperature play as well as wax. Wax does not be completely different in that with fire play, we're taking the heat from a flame or the flame itself and putting it in contact with the skin. Whereas with the wax, the lit candle, the actual fire on the candle is not making contact or none of that is being transferred as far as like the heat from that flame goes, but the heated wax is getting poured on the skin. And there's heat transfer from the wax. It would be technically different and would not constitute under fire play, but it is side by side under temperature play.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. What are the risks and how do you keep all participants safe?
This is an interesting question. In the BDSM world, there's this concept that if you ask 10 people the same question, you're going to get 10 different answers. And that's sort of been a motto that I've kind of always followed. So when it comes to this question, we're really talking about risk mitigation and risk profile. Everyone's risk profile is a little bit different. I can speak from my perspective or the procedures that I follow. Generally speaking, we want to practice good risk mitigation. And what that means is we want to look at the processes that we're using, the setup that we're working with, and we want to see if I misstep in any of my procedures or, you know, what could go wrong based on my setup. If my fuel bowl spills, what is it likely to affect? What if it spills and it ignites? What's it likely to affect? And we want to look at all these things and kind of assume that this could happen. And what do I have in place to limit that either from happening or to deal with it when it does happen? I think that's the most important point. When it comes to your house burning down, we're really concerned with our fuel bowl mostly and our fuel bowl not spilling. So we want a very sturdy fuel bowl, or we want our equipment table, which our fuel bowl sits on, to be sturdy, whether we're in our home or a public venue. Can the table get knocked over? Is it in an area of a walkway? We talk about vertical fire play or fire caning that we're doing vertically. A lot of times our fuel bowl is on the floor. So where do we position it on the floor? Because we have to consider people traffic, but we have to consider that traffic, you know, around our equipment and our fuel bowl. Will it get knocked over? If it does, what is it likely to affect? When it comes to the person, keeping the individual safe, we're mostly trying to make sure that we have enough practice in the specific techniques that we're doing, that we have some sort of control over our torches to ensure that either our torch will not malfunction in some way, or that we won't screw up in performing a technique in some way that can increase the likelihood of someone getting injured. So a prime example would be if you're working with the layering technique, even if we're not doing layering, if we're doing combining techniques and let's say doing sliding with pressure so that we get lit trails. So any technique where we're getting lit trails, whether it's through the process of layering or through the process of combining application techniques in our first burn stage, if we work with that lit trail, the time at which that lit trail can stay lit and not injure a person is very, very short. And you can think of it as when it first ignites, there's going to be relatively no heat, right? It takes that split second. They're going to feel the heat, and then it's going to quickly spike up with each millisecond or each second that it's on the skin. So you need to make sure that you have the skills, the comfortability working with their trails, working with larger torch heads to essentially make sure that you can put out trails, be comfortable with how many times you're layering or how often you're going over a specific area. And a lot of that comes down to the negotiation beforehand to know, does someone, have they done fire before? Is this their first time? And things like that. But there is something to be said. Most people who do fire, and I agree with this, will say it's not about if you will cause a burn. It's about when. It's going to happen at some point. Now, typically, these burns are very minimal. You're going to have a pain sensation prior to a burn. Like if you put your hand under hot water, you're going to say, ow, and pull away. But if you don't have lasting redness and pain, clinically, you don't have a burn. You have a reaction to painful stimuli. 9 times out of 10, that happens. And then occasionally, first degree burns will happen, more likely in certain areas of the skin than others. And then on rare occasions, you'll have second degree burns, but they should be rare. And then you have those, the crazy examples you hear about where people get seriously injured. Luckily, I have been very good about my risk mitigation and my level of precautions when it comes to my standards, that I've never had anything that severe. I've burnt myself worse than I've ever burned a bottle. 9 times out of 10, you're gonna get a worse burn cooking in your kitchen than by doing fire play, if you know what you're doing, which is the big thing. Having the knowledge going in to understand what you're doing and the science of what you're doing and to learn properly how to do it.
Would you say fire play is like an adrenaline type thing, or is it the risk taking part of it that really turns people on? What would you think?
I mean, this is going to be different for everyone. For me, I just enjoy playing with fire. Growing up, it was a fascinating thing to me. For me, I enjoy playing with fire, and the bottom is just my canvas, right? I enjoy taking my skills that I've learned and tried to hone over the years and provide someone with a positive experience when it comes to fire. I very much consider myself more of a service top than anything else. So I very much care about how it feels and to try to provide someone with this positive experience. So for me, it's a mix of that. I really enjoy working with fire, like playing with it, and having a bottom allows me to do that in a fun way. Obviously, I can practice on a fire mat and all that, but it's a certain level of engagement with another human being. The person can walk away and saying, oh, that felt wonderful. My fire mat cannot express that to me. For others, I mean, I'm sure that it's true for other people, but I couldn't say specifically. You know, I can only speak for myself on this one.
Okay, that was actually a very good answer. And that also leads up to my next question. How do you talk to your partner about getting into fire play?
Presuming they're already in the BDSM scene, I think it's a lot easier. So if someone's already into the scene, then they're probably already somewhat familiar. The best way, I think, is to go to a class with them. Most people view fire burn bad. We're kind of taught that from a young age. You know, fire burn bad, don't play with matches, fire is dangerous, which it is. But when we know what we're doing, we can kind of harness that and use it in a way that is arguably safer by having that knowledge. So if you're already in the scene and your partner's already in the scene, go to a class. They're going to come out with a different understanding in their view of fire. With the demonstrations, especially that I do in my classes specifically, I set my fuel ball on fire. I set my drip towel on fire. After I set it on fire in a horizontal plane, I lift it up so the fire exists in a vertical plane to the drip towel to really demonstrate how things are affected by fire depending on their orientation. Because when you have a flame that's lit, fire wants to move up to less pressure, heat wants to move up. So on a horizontal plane, you have a lot of heat waste, which is in fire play, we have a lot of heat waste. We demonstrate all these things and people see like, oh, wow, like the carpet's fine, or, oh, the cotton towel's fine. Oh, but it was a huge difference when you lifted that up because now the fire is being applied to a dry area that isn't soaked in 70. And a lot of it has to do with the fuel. The fact that it's a 70% ISO and 30% water, the water acts as a coolant to stop the cotton from burning, which is the same principle behind why our cotton torches don't burn. So I think that when people see this, they're more likely to explore fire because they see what ways in which we're able to manipulate it for our benefit, and they, by proxy, become a little bit less frightened by it. Now, if someone's not in the scene, then I think instead of trying to bring your partner into fire, you should start with introducing them to the scene. Fire would not be my recommendation for your first go-to. Get someone familiar with BDSM in general and then go from there. But don't just go straight into fire play without ever having introduced BDSM from the get-go.
Where can our listeners find out more about fire play?
So if you're not on FetLife yet, I do recommend joining. There's a lot of resources on there for a myriad of things, not just fire. One, there's a fire play group that has a lot of people in it. There's a lot of information that gets shared. That would be one good resource. As it pertains to me, you can go to my website, which is echoesfire.com, or you can view me on FET, which is also echoesfire. I have a number of blogs that cover a lot of this information. You can reach out to me. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Yeah, otherwise, there are also a lot of things on Reddit. I've seen a few other individual like web pages that have information. I'm not sure how much they're updated, so I would really recommend FetLife as your first go-to resource. There is also, if you are based in Philadelphia, which is where I'm based, I am a member of House Blackfire, which is a group of us who are really close fire friends. I participate in helping to run Ignite, which is primarily ran by Nurgle, but we assist with it. It's a Skillshare. It's a great resource. Definitely check it out. Their days do change each month, but if you're in the Baltimore area, there is Society of the Phoenix. They're a really great group as well. They do Skillshares as well. They do classes down there. They've been running for, I want to say, almost a decade now. They're a great resource if you're in that area. And then I believe there is a small educational group in Ohio run by a gentleman that goes by Fire Buddha. He does a few classes out there. Not sure if they have the same Skillshare level setup, but still good resources.
What safety equipment do you recommend having with you during fire play?
For safety equipment, generally speaking, you want to have a fire blanket, preferably as large as your table. You want it to be large enough that it can cover someone fully. And then you also want a fire extinguisher, either an AB or an ABC. An ABC is preferred just because there is a potential that if a fuel bowl spills and ignites, it can also affect electrical equipment depending on how you set up. An ABC, there are two options. There's CO2 and multipurpose dry chemical. The CO2 is safer for electrical equipment. It won't damage it, whereas the multipurpose dry chemical can. However, CO2 can be a little pricey, and I have not found one available on like Amazon. So it's not very practical to access to order one. So multipurpose dry chemical is the way to go. The issue is that it is very, very difficult to clean up if you ever have to use it. I luckily have never had to use one, so I've not gotten to experience the hell that goes along with cleaning that up, but it's your best bet. You can get them for like $20 on Amazon. You can get refillable and one-time use. I'm not sure what the refill costs, but I imagine that it's around a little bit more than the $20. And then you also have to drive to the place to get it refilled. So my recommendation would likely be the one-time use, but make sure it's an ABC multipurpose dry chemical. ABC means that it deals with class A, B, and C fires. So class A is like wood paper, B is like gasoline, isopropyl alcohol, the gas that runs your stove, and then C is any fire that involves live electrical equipment. As far as that goes, they're really the two main things when it comes to individual equipment for safety.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Now, this is a question Damien's having me ask all the guests. Has erotic play or sex ever sent you or a partner to the ER?
For me, it has not. I have heard specifically for fire play, there tends to be a story every few years where something does seriously go wrong and someone needs to seek emergent medical care. I've never had that happen to me, luckily, and hopefully never. It's always something that I do think if you're going to get into fire play, really, really make sure that you have your safety equipment, make sure that you're well educated, that you seek education from someone reputable to lower the risk of it potentially happening. But it is always a possibility, just like crossing the road. Every time we do it, there's a potential you could get hit by a car. So if you do partake in fire play, you do have to acknowledge that one of these rare situations could occur, and they are rare, but they do happen.
I like to tell all my listeners, do your research before trying a new fetish, new play, because without research, that's when the accidents are going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
Before we go, is there anything you want to tell the listeners? Anything that you felt like we could go over more? Anything about yourself?
Yeah, so I say this at the beginning of all my classes. Trust but verify. If you wind up taking a class and something doesn't sit right with you as far as information goes, verify the info. Just like in my classes, there's been info that I have changed over the years because participants in my class who have a certain background in something present that information to me. I don't take it at face value. I will look into it. And if I can also verify, you know, the claims that they're making, either by reading the links that they send me or the studies they send me, I do change information in my classes based on that. So if you do go to a class, whether it's mine or anybody else's, trust but verify. work with the assumption that whoever the instructor is providing good information, but don't trust it 100% at face value if something doesn't sit right.
That's very good advice. I definitely listen to that advice, because someone may say they're an expert, and in reality, they're not. So do your research, verify. Thank you for that advice.
Absolutely.
And just like the flame itself, fireplay can be mesmerizing and captivating. But remember, knowledge is your greatest tool. Approach it with respect, seek guidance, and let this newfound understanding spark a whole new dimension of pleasure and self-discovery. I want to thank you for joining us. Like Echo said, verify, go to class, do your research before just jumping in with both feet, because that's when the accidents will happen. If you would like to learn more about my podcast, you can go to wickedashland.com to subscribe, and we will be posting a link up to Echo's website and all the other places that he mentioned. I made sure to write that down, and we'll get them uploaded so you can be sure to do your research before just jumping in with both feet.